offense and not stepped on the field. All right, time for today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
So I asked Jeff about this the other day. What are some individual matchups you're looking forward to in Saturday's game between Georgia and Florida? Is it running backs versus running backs? Is it going to be Fromm versus Trask, our O-line versus their D-line? What's the most intriguing matchup to you in this game?
Yeah, I think it's our O-line against their D-line. Their D-line is one of the most havoc-wreaking defensive lines in the country. I think back to their victory over Auburn, it was one reason I really liked Florida in that game, is because Auburn was going to be going on the road with a freshman quarterback. Now, Auburn had done that already in the season, going to Texas A&M, and Bo Nix passed that test, and they won. But Texas A&M's defense is not remotely...
We're learning that's not as great of a team as we thought it was.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, as far as just bringing pressure and putting heat on quarterbacks consistently, it's nowhere even close to what Florida's brings. And the Gators have Zuniga back and healthy this week.
Right.
And, you know, I certainly think that that's a matchup there. South Carolina's got an elite defensive line, as we saw, and with Kinlaw, who's as good a defensive lineman basically outside of Auburn, and that group that that Auburn has this season. And Georgia's offensive line was humbled a little bit, I think, in that game. So, you know, that's another aspect of the team and the offense in general, is that offensive line looking to really bounce back against a formidable foe. And you know, one with Todd Grantham, they like to dial up the aggression and bring that pressure. So that I think that's matchup number one. And then number two, it's the situation we've been talking about now for the last two games. It's been Georgia's wide receivers not being able to get open when it's just them one-on-one.
Yep.
And the Gators have got a heck of a secondary, a great set of corners, and you know, what's Georgia going to expect? Are they just going to try and keep pressing that issue with, hey, go out and get open,
right?
Or, you know, have they worked on something to maybe come up with other ways to try and get their receivers open to get something started in the passing game?
Like I said, I think the status of Cage for Saturday is the enormous X factor on how all that plays out.
Yeah,
because if he's on the field, then obviously you're going to get more attention on his side. That can free somebody up like Pickens, or maybe, you know, somebody else get a little bit more open and have more options out there, in addition to having that senior guy that's made some great catches this year already.
Yeah. And it's just, you're in a spot in the college game where there's nobody forcing a uniform injury report. And so coaches are just able to go with he's week to week. And you have gotten word that he's at least been cleared to practice, but
positive.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries that he had with broken ribs and a shoulder injury seemed ominous a couple of weeks ago, and I sort of had kind of already written off that he wasn't going to be available Saturday. But you know, now you've at least got some sense that he's given it a go at practice, but that doesn't mean we're going to see him.
Again, because this is kind of a make-or-break game for both teams, really, and if you lose this game, your aspirations for the playoff and all that are out the window. And for a team like Georgia, you know, if you lose this game to Florida, then you're on serious concern with the games you have after that, Missouri, Auburn, and A&M, that you could possibly drop one, if not two, of those games too.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're talking about a 9-3, 8-4 season possibly.
Well, and, you know, as Jeff pointed out last hour too, the threat would be real that if Florida wins on Saturday, then they are in line to put together just a dream season, at least a season that gets them with a crack at either Bama or LSU in the SEC championship game. And we don't want to see that happen.
No,
we don't want to see Florida make that leap in, you know, Mullen's second season.
I was going to say that, you know, for all the argument's sake that we had when Kirby took us to the national championship in his second year, Florida beating us head-to-head and going to the SEC championship in Mullen's second year will give them that exact same type of argument for recruits.
Yeah. You know, and going back to the offseason and all the noise they were making, and they set their sights on Georgia, and this is that moment. Now, there's been a lot of press this week and a lot of ink spilled about, hey, Mullen has Kirby's had the upper hand when they've met, even when Kirby was the defensive coordinator at Alabama. I guess Mullen did beat us when he was state's head coach in 2010. And Todd Grantham, from the Belk Bowl with Louisville to the Mississippi State game here in Athens in 2017 to last year's game down in Jacksonville. And Grantham has, to give him his due, since he left here, he's He's had good, successful defenses, but he has looked like the Todd Grantham that we came to not admire when he has faced Georgia. And, you know, so for those two just individually as coaches with Mullen and Grantham, you know there's going to be a little extra motivation for them.
Well, that's the thing. And you mentioned what happened in the offseason with Dan Mullen, you know, taking jabs at Georgia and stuff like that. And obviously Kirby's not the kind of guy that's going to respond with social media or sound bites or anything like that. He just simply said, we're going to do our talking with our helmets on. And, well, here comes Saturday. Here's your chance to do it. You know, you don't give Dan – or I almost said Dan Quinn – Dan Mullen any more reason to gloat.
Yeah. Well, Dan Quinn is a former Florida defensive coordinator.
He is a former – and we beat him when he was the DC there.
Well, of course.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, staying on the topic of this game, this isn't the first time these two teams have met as top 10 opponents. Again, they did the exact same thing last year. But you mentioned, like, there was a lot of confidence for Georgia last year, not as much going into the game this year. What is the hype around this game, just in general, remind you of a matchup between the two in the past?
Yeah, I guess you do probably go back to then that 2012 edition of the game when Florida was undefeated. That ended up being their only loss.
Yep.
Of course, Georgia ended up in the SEC championship game losing a heartbreaker, and Florida didn't have to go and ended up in the better bowl because they got to go to the Sugar Bowl.
They still lost, though.
Yeah, to Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes, they did.
You know why? Because all that guy does is cover spreads.
That's right.
But 5-0 this year with the Saints, and like 20-something and 4 in his career as a starter in the NFL, but... I guess you have to go back to
that's what I was thinking
to that one because it is like fun when you think back to last year's game. Like, wait a second, both teams had one loss, both teams were ranked in the top 10. But yeah, that one still it still felt like Georgia was the way better team,
right?
And you know, it was when the dust settled on the game, it was tight there for a while, but the Dogs ended up pulling away and winning 36-17. But this one does feel, and it does. I mean, I think. So Jeff brought it up when we talked to him last hour. Georgia had scored, I think, in the 40s of like every game last year except for the loss at LSU. So it just was – the offense was in a much better place a year ago than it does entering this game.
That's why we got to go out there and drop 42 on them again.
That'd be nice.
It would be.
Yeah.
Sure hope so.
Now, can we do that just straight up on offense, or are we going to need a non-offensive touchdown?
We're going to need a nod or two in there.
Okay.
I'd love to have a return touchdown just to get some life on special teams.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. Because it seems like our special teams has just gotten to, we've resorted to just catch the punt.
It's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't fumble it.
Yeah. I mean, which isn't the worst thing, because if your opponent's going to volunteer to give the ball to you,
right,
then take it. But it would also be nice to have some ability to maybe bust something open there.
Those occasional 12 to 15 yards on a return, maybe even the occasional return touchdown, you know, that adds up and it means a lot as the season goes along.
Yeah. Well, with like kickoff returns, I feel like we got to the point where just no one anywhere is returning kicks anymore, especially now that they put in the when you could fair catch it within the – well, no, is it the 20-yard line?
I think it's the 25. So
yeah,
it's,
and get a
– that's where the ball would be placed anyway. Yeah. Certainly nobody's returning Rod's kicks.
No, yeah. But even you see these kicks that are going to the 5-yard line, teams are just downing them.
Right. Stay on the topic of college football, if you – watch the Ohio State game against Wisconsin last week. If you didn't already know who Chase Young was, you learned a lot about him that day. He's having an absolute monster of a season. He's got 13.5 sacks already, which is more than he had the entire season last year. How legitimate is his Heisman argument right now?
I think he might get a courtesy invite to the ceremony, but it's a quarterback's award.
Right.
I don't think they're giving it to a defensive guy. And you've got the year that Burrow is having at LSU. If Alabama wins next week over LSU, then I think Tua's right there front and center. I guess Hurts's candidacy has been hurt by the fact that they lost to Kansas State, but 2 years ago that team lost to Iowa State.
I was going to say Baker and Kyler Murray both had losses in season as well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
write him off just yet. But I think with Young, it's...
I mean, going to New York is still a big deal because we haven't had a defensive player go since Ndamukong Suh 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's still worth noting.
And honestly, like, he probably should have won.
Yeah.
But, like, so when you think of if Ndamukong Suh, go back and look at the year he had that season in Nebraska, and if he didn't win the Heisman Trophy, then it's hard to think that any defensive guy is ever going to win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
That plays strictly defense. I know Charles Woodson... But he wasn't just a, you know, he wasn't limited to just playing defense, which is why he, and even he shouldn't have won it. I mean, Peyton Manning should have won the Heisman Trophy that year. But
are you telling me the Heisman Trophy isn't the perfect indication of who's going to become a great player at the next level?
No, it's not. But no, it is not. But it's, and it's also become a, an award that's given out to quarterbacks too.
Well, so you get the occasional running back every 6-7 years.
Yeah, but even the running backs are all Bama backs, right?
That's true. The last.
The last non-Bama back was Reggie Bush, wasn't it?
Well, that doesn't count.
And he doesn't
anymore.
Count. Yeah.
We're supposed to forget that
he's
happened.
He's been vacated.
He's been wiped clean from our memories, which is funny now as this NCAA stuff is changing with the payments for players and stuff like that. When that's implemented, is USC going to, like, recognize Reggie Bush's Heisman again? Like, oh, remember, you can remember this now. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, is the, because I know the NCAA has gone back and like reinstated Paterno's wins and stuff, so they've walked back some of that. So I don't know if sometime down the line they'll walk that back. But
Reggie Bush gonna get a knock at the door and they're gonna hand him the trophy again.
But that's part of what USC agreed to with their punishment was they agreed to, you know, not associate with him anymore.
You know who they do associate with?
Yes, I do.
O.J. Simpson.
Yes, that guy.
He's got his jersey at the L.A. Coliseum and everything.
Well, he was acquitted, though, Tyler.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
He was acquitted.
Anyway, moving on to the NFL. You weren't here this week for Top 5, Bottom 5 on Tuesday. The only one I'm interested in from you, though, is what is your bottom team in the NFL as of this week? Because me and Jeff disagreed on this on Tuesday.
Well, did you do the thing where you've grandfathered the Dolphins in as the worst because they're tanking?
Jeff did. I didn't.
Oh.
I put the Falcons as the worst.
Oh, well, no. Well, see, the Falcons, I'm sure, is the argument you're making is that the Falcons are actually not trying to lose games, whereas the Dolphins are.
They should have at least been some sort of a contender this year.
Yeah, well, that's why, like, we did it. The Dolphins are tanking. So here's the bottom five non-tanking teams.
Okay.
And I think I think I had the Falcons last week. I still put the Bengals below them, but I had the Falcons as the basically the worst one-loss team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe this is just me being a fan, feeling a little more emotional about it than the other teams, but yeah, I had them as my worst team because, again, they were at least supposed to be worth something, and I know they played better in the second half on Sunday, but that first half was atrocious against the Seahawks, and that touchdown they gave up to DK Metcalf, where there wasn't a defender within 20 yards of him in the end zone, that was just the epitome of the whole season. They shouldn't have even come out at halftime after that.
Well, that's been the entire season has been them getting blown out in the first half, and then they put up a bunch of junk stats in the second half and make it closer.
Matt Schaub has the second most passing yards in a single game in franchise history.
Yeah, and what he threw, 50-something passes, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, again, the running game's not there.
Yeah. Well, and they were just playing from behind. Yeah. I'm sure Seattle got to a point where it's like, that's fine. Complete that pass and just keep the clock running. We're ready to go home.
But you know what they didn't do is enter the history books as the only team to go 5 straight games without a sack.
So they got to Russell Wilson?
Grady Jarrett got one and Tyler Davidson got one.
Okay.
So in the past 5 games, we have 2 whole sacks.
Well, maybe that's how Quinn kept his job. They got a couple sacks. Things are looking up now
maybe
for that. Boy, they play the Saints next Sunday, too.
I was going to say, if you just ignore the fact that Nick Bosa alone has more sacks than the entire Atlanta Falcons team this season.
So they've got 3.5 now, right?
On the season, they have, I think they have 7 on the season.
The Falcons do?
I think so, because you got the 2 on Sunday. I know Vic has 1.5, Tack has 1.5, so that brings you up to 5. And I'm sure Grady has another 1 or 2 in there as well. So they got 7 on the season. They just didn't have any for 4 straight games.
Yeah. But I'm with you on other than the Dolphins to me are just in their own category. And that play Monday night when they were up 14 to
were they blitzed on the 3rd and 20?
They sent 8 guys.
Yeah.
And the Steelers hit a 52-yard touchdown pass on basically a shallow cross.
Yeah.
Because all the Dolphins had were like they had three guys in the That was a team that was.
Do you think Brian Flores went into halftime angry because they were leading 14-0?
Yeah, he probably.
Guys, what are we doing?
Yeah, but he called the right play. That was that old, like, the grits blitz. Like, Jerry Glanville used to do that.
Well, that was so funny about, I guess it was Booger that was breaking it down after the play. He was just dumbfounded that anybody would even try that kind of play on a 3rd and 20.
Yeah.
And, again, he's not going to admit that they're tanking, but it's like, yeah, we know why they did that.
They're not even covering it up at this
point. You've gotten rid of your best defensive player in Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Traded Kenyon Drake to Arizona because their backs are all hurt.
He didn't even make the trip to Pittsburgh. They're like, you know what, you just stay at home. We're gonna get rid of you.
But, you know, the crazy thing about that game, though, is that when you think about it, there was a case to be made for the Dolphins to try and win that game because they own Pittsburgh's first-round pick.
True.
So that would have been one, hey, you win this game, you hurt the Steelers.
Right.
You still have a good line on being the number one overall pick, but also because now Pittsburgh, you're going to get the worst draft pick.
That's true.
Because you tanked that game, but they were definitely tanking.
They're not even good at tanking.
Yeah. I mean, that play was definitely like, I mean, that was just a shallow cross, the receiver running wide open over the middle of the field, and then there was no one left to try and tackle him.
I was going
to
say, it's not like anybody would have made that much of an effort to tackle him anyway.
No. So that's why they went into the category all on their own, and then you try and come up with five other teams. I upgraded Washington, though, because they lost back-to-back games, however, where they covered both spreads without scoring a touchdown.
That's right.
So, you know, for me, I respect that. To me, like, I had a hard time not putting them in the top five.
Just for that alone?
Just for that alone, yes. I mean, including a game they didn't score a point and they covered.
Yeah.
Now, that's top five stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in my world.
So I watched this video last night that was kind of talking about what the NFL is going to look like in 10 years. And this wasn't just a guy basically throwing speculation at the wall. He had some stats and stuff to back it up. And one thing that I found interesting, he was talking about over the past 10 years of Super Bowl champions. And from 2010 to this year in 2019, three new teams have won a Super Bowl that hadn't won it in any of the previous decades. You have the New Orleans Saints, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Philadelphia Eagles. The 10 years before that, from 2000 to 2009, you had four teams win their first Super Bowl with the Rams, the Ravens, the Patriots, and the Buccaneers. So assuming these stats stay current through 2029, who are three teams that have never won a Super Bowl that you could see winning one before the end of the next decade?
The Houston Texans.
Okay.
Do
you need a list of all the teams that haven't won one?
No, I think I know.
Okay.
The ones that haven't won are Houston, Jacksonville, the Clowns, and Detroit. And the Arizona Cardinals.
You got Bengals, Bills, Browns,
yeah.
Cardinals, Chargers, Falcons, Jags, Lions, Panthers, Texans, Titans, Vikings.
All right. So
I'm
going to say Houston.
Okay.
I'm going to say, I'm not going to say the Clowns, actually. I can't believe they
did turn it over on three consecutive snaps.
They should have won that game.
Yeah.
They should have. They should have beaten New England. But it was like at the end of the day, it was, you know what? This is Freddie Kitchens against Bill Belichick, so it all makes sense.
And now Baker Mayfield is fighting reporters.
All right. I think Houston is an obvious one. Now, you know what? I got a ride with my man, Kyler Murray.
Okay.
Number one pick at quarterback at, say, Arizona gets it done.
Think they're just going to set a new trend in the NFL?
Yeah. And so in the next 10 years, so I got Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, and a team that hasn't. You know, to me, it feels like the Dolphins haven't ever won a Super Bowl. That hasn't happened in my lifetime. What team is going to draft Trevor Lawrence? But his stock is low now, huh? What's wrong with him?
It is. I mean, if the Bengals are really bad again next year, they might have a shot at him.
Yeah. I can't say Cincinnati. That's a horrible franchise. I don't think that, you know, it's Stafford is just, he's about to come out of the prime of his career. So I think if Detroit hasn't gotten it done yet, it's not going to be the Lions either. I'm going to say, not going to be Buffalo, not with Josh Allen.
Does Phillip Rivers ever reach the Super Bowl?
No, it's time's winding down. And also, like, where that team, just their whole situation. You know what I want to say? Here's in the next decade.
Okay.
Let's do this. Let's call them the London Jaguars.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Now, will Gardner Minshew be the quarterback for that Super Bowl?
One can only hope. Yeah, but let's go with the London Jaguars. Okay. They moved from Jacksonville.
It's getting there.
Yeah. And so a team in London wins the Super Bowl.
That's another thing that video pointed out, is that the NFL averages new teams every 14 years, and we're long overdue for a new one. And again, that would just be a team moving, but you can imagine there's going to be a 33rd and 34th team at some point.
The Chargers are going to end up moving out of L.A.
Yeah, that soccer stadium.
Yeah. Well, even they're going to move into when they're just going to share with the Rams.
That new stadium.
So they'll have a new stadium, but still, there's no fan base there.
Well, there's hardly any fans for the Rams.
Yeah.
And that team went to the Super Bowl.
No. You're just going to have more people rooting against you.
Right.
Than can fit into the current soccer stadium
right.
where you play. All right. There's today's 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.